Exodus chapter 20, verse 15. Exodus chapter 20, verse 15. As you turn, for friends who are visiting with us, we want to inform you, if you have not heard of the homegoing of Catherine McDowell. She died a week ago Friday and was buried this past Tuesday with a very triumphant homegoing from the many, many who gathered here in this sanctuary to say farewell to a wonderful person. We thank God for her memory. Exodus 20, verse 15. In the original, just one word, literally translated two words, not steal, or don't steal. Whatever we think of this call to honesty, there are 101 things that really race through our minds. The way in which this can be done, the way in which it is done, and so on and so on. And I smiled as I was preparing several times because of all the illustrations that came to my mind as I was going through this text. And one that is foremost in my mind this morning is a fellow who wrote the letter to the IRS. And if you're an American, that makes sense. If you're not, you might have some information, but most of us might not know. That's the Internal Revenue Service. Those are the people that check up on you. In fact, I got a letter in the mail about a week ago from Revenue Canada. They want to know if I'm really a minister. They want to know if I can claim all those things that I have been claiming. I don't know what they are, but that's what they want to know. They want to know if I'm a minister, if I'm really employed by a church, if I really have a parish, and so on and so on. And I thought I was paying someone else to do that for me. I hate taking care of income tax things. I literally hate it. So I give it to someone to do it. I pay some money to get it done. So when I got this letter from Revenue Canada, I thought, okay, I'm going to give it to this fellow. And he said, here's what you do. So Dennis is helping me. But this fellow wrote his letter to IRS. And he wrote it, dear IRS, for several years, my conscience has been bothering me. Enclosed is a check. And in the event my conscience continues to bother me, I'll send you the rest. I don't know that we would be guilty of that, but perhaps we might be tempted to see how much we can get away with. This business of stealing is more than just breaking into somebody's place. There is something that goes far beyond that, which I hope by the Spirit's ministry we will see this morning, get a brand new understanding of what it means not to steal. And it begins with what I call the privilege of ownership. The privilege of ownership. Ownership is a divine privilege. It begins in the very heart of God, because it is the nature of God to give. We need to turn to Joshua chapter 1 as we look at a few verses dealing with this wonderful, wonderful privilege. Joshua 1, God is talking with the people of Israel as they are beginning to get ready to go into the land. And he begins by saying to them, every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given it to you. Every place that you put your foot, I have given to you. Long ago, centuries before, 400 years in fact, God had written, had spoken to Abraham, saying, I am going to give you a piece of land. You are going to become the owner of it. In one sense. And I want you to go and I want you to cultivate it, and I want that land to be for you the means by which you actually, from that place, live and distribute to the rest of the world from what you have, to distribute to the rest of the world the grace and the goodness and the generosity of God. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17, Paul seems to understand this as he writes to Timothy, and he said, "Tell those who are in the church who have been privileged to be rich, not to be self-centered with what they have, but to realize that God has given us all things freely to enjoy, freely." God was not pressured into giving. C.S. Lewis puts it this way: God does not give to us because he is forced. He does not give to us because he thinks that by giving to us, you and I might love him more. God does not give because there is something in God that says if you give, there might be some returns. No, God gives because it is the nature of God to give. God gives because that is the way God is. He doesn't give out of any other motive. And so Paul is saying, tell those who are rich that God has given. And in the idea of given, it is the idea of something just drives a person within or from himself to do what he is doing. St. Paul, writing to the Corinthians, said, "What do you have that you did not first receive?" So none of us has anything this morning, whether it be land or possession otherwise, none of us has anything that God did not give to us freely. It is a gift from God. And because it is his nature to give, he wasn't pressured by the angels or members of the Trinity to say, "I have to give this to someone." He gave it because that's the way God is. It is a divine privilege. A divine privilege. What a wonderful thing it is then to understand that we can truly appreciate and enjoy whatever we might have because God is the one who has given it to us. It's a divine privilege, this privilege of ownership. It's also a divine pleasure. It's a divine pleasure. In 1 Timothy 6:17, tell them who are rich, not to focus upon it, but upon him who gives us all things to enjoy. To enjoy. I spoke on this in another way some time ago at the early part of the summer, and there were some people visiting the church from Yakima, Washington. And at the end of the service, the man came to me and said, "You couldn't have preached a more timely message. We are traveling in our RV, and we have been traveling all across the country. And there was a big gathering up here at Markham Fairgrounds." He said, "We wanted to come to church, and we saw this church. We didn't know what it was like, but we came in, and you preached upon the gift of God to us. Don't forget the giver in the garden." And God has given us things, friends, not to make us feel sheepish with it. God has given us things not so that we can say, "Oh, I've got to be careful how I use this now. If I use it the wrong way, God is going to zap me." No, God has given us what we have to enjoy, to really look at it, and to derive pleasure because it is a gift from God to us. Our children, our homes. Let me put it right down to where I am now. I was going to say when I was at the other church, but I'll talk about it now. You know, when we bought our present car, I looked at it and had leather inside. Ooh. Not used to that. It's a cheap car. It's a 1993. It had kilometers on it, but the price was good. And I remember when we drove away, I thought, "What will the church people think of this?" I did. For a long time, I couldn't enjoy it. Then, especially when someone came and they said, "We saw this magnificent car in front of the church," and wonder, "Who owns that?" Oh man, I almost traded it in for a VW. Yeah. How many people, my friends, cannot appreciate that God is not stingy, that God is not a killjoy, that God is not out there to see if you're going to enjoy something so he can say, "Aha, there's one, get him." That's not God. He is a God of joy who derives pleasure from what he sees in his people. And because God can rejoice in his creation, he wants his creatures to rejoice in his gifts. It is a delightful pleasure. Because I don't worship that car. You don't worship your home. You don't worship your land. You look at it as a stewardship. You look at it as something that God has given so that you can really enjoy life with God. It's a privilege to own. I did ask someone, when you fix up your cottage, or when you fix up your home, and everything that you want in your home, all the plumbing is done, the basement is done, the wallpapering is done, when you do all those things, what else is there to do? I said, buy a cottage. Well, I don't know about that. But I do know, friends, that perhaps we're saying to the world, there is no joy in being a Christian because look at what I have and I can't even enjoy it. Now, I'm not talking about worshiping of things. I'm not talking about idolatry. I am talking, my friends, about seeing yourself as a steward of what God has given and the purpose of which he gives it. He has given us all things freely to enjoy. Enough said. Let's look at the perils of ownership. The perils of ownership. Make no mistake about it. The more you have, the more difficult it is. But let's look at it from a way that I have never really dealt with it before. What are the perils of ownership? The first peril of ownership is the appearance of inequity. That is, to believe that because someone has more than you have, it isn't right, it isn't fair. Why should someone have this when I don't have that? We look at certain things and we say, how I wish I had that. The ninth commandment will deal with that. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. But what we're looking at, my friends, is what happens to us when we see what others have. And to understand this, I went way beyond time. I went right into eternity itself to understand where did this idea of fairness, because I don't have what someone else has, where does that come from? I invite you to turn to Isaiah chapter 14. Isaiah chapter 14. And I've never dealt with this text this way before, sitting in seclusion in my study at home, pouring myself over these words, thou shalt not steal. I believe that the Holy Spirit led me in this. First of all, the appearance of inequity first appeared in eternity. It was perceived, as it were, in eternity. Listen to these words, Isaiah chapter 14, verses 12 to 14. How have you fallen from heaven, O star of the morning? O son of dawn? You have been cut down to the earth. You who have weakened the nations. Because you said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God. I will sit on the mount of the assembly, in the recesses of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High. Here, my friends, back there in the eternities, long before Adam and Eve were created, God had made the angels. God had made creatures to abide in his eternal presence. There was order, order. God possessed what none of his creatures possessed. But there was one of God's creatures who said, I don't like what you have because I don't have it. You have completeness. I don't have that. You are exalted. And I am not exalted. There's the appearance of inequity. You see, there's the idea that God has what I don't have. And if God has made me to see what he has, When I don't have it, then it is not fair for God to keep for himself what he should give to me. It's perceived in eternity. This whole business, my friends, of wanting what belongs to someone else comes from a heart that has the sense that life is not fair, and therefore, what someone has, I want. We'll see it worked out in a bit on earth. It's perceived in eternity. I don't understand that. I don't understand how God could make angels who knew absolutely nothing about sin except to say this, that God made angels with the capacity to choose. And when the Son of the Morning saw God's exaltation, saw God's possession of himself. See, human beings do not possess themselves. Only God can. That's why we die. That's because we cannot possess ourselves. God cannot die. He possesses life within himself. And Satan was saying, why didn't you make me with the capacity to do and to be what you are? And so in his heart, he saw this inequity and he said, I will do something about it. It is actually permeating our earth, our world, this appearance of inequity. Look, if you please, in Psalm 73. Psalm 73, the psalmist is speaking, the godly man is speaking. And he writes, surely God is good. There's no question about that. God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet came close to stumbling. My steps had almost slipped, for I was envious of the wicked or the arrogant as I saw the prosperity of the ungodly. I saw what they had, and I thought, look at me. I am following God. I am keeping myself pure, and they have what I don't have. The psalmist said, I was envious of the wicked. And it goes all through earth, friends. I found a very interesting story along the line. A little boy was asked, if you found a briefcase with $1 million, what would you do? He said, if it belonged to someone who was poor, I would return it. See, if it belongs to someone who is poor, I'd return it. I mean, it doesn't even make sense, does it? But my friends, that's how this appearance of inequity is seen. Listen to the employer who works for his boss, and his boss is a slave driver, and he says, listen, I can take this, he won't miss it anyway. I have been working for so long for this. I deserve this because he doesn't pay me what I deserve. Therefore, I will make up the difference with encroaching upon his rights of ownership. See, God is not simply saying, thou shalt not steal. God is instructing us, my friends, as how to understand, listen, that whatever possession you and I have, because it initially belongs to him, who steals from me, steals from God. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and everything in it. Whenever someone steals from someone who owns what they do not have, they are stealing from God because God is the one who has given it as a steward. Permeates earth. When you see that it awakens perversity, I say it awakens perversity. Jesus himself in Mark chapter 7 is giving the instruction as to the condition of the human heart. And he said it isn't what goes into a man that defiles a man, it is what comes out of a man. And then he says, out of the heart proceeds these things. Mark 7:21. Out of the heart proceeds stealing. Read it for yourself. Jesus said that there is in the heart, because it came from the one who tempted our first parents, it has actually affected you and me. You and I never have to teach our children to leave things alone. We teach them how to take it back. They take it. I remember when I was a kid, my son is downstairs. When I was a kid, I thought, I wanted something different, so I stole an egg. And like a dummy, I put it in my pocket. It's true, I did it. And I don't want to tell you how wet I felt after a while. No one taught me. My mother was a military agent. I mean, she had no patience with stealing. I could still see those fingers saying, a liar is a thief and a thief is a murderer. Wow. It helped, let me tell you. The word thief comes from the Greek word, a Latin word actually, we got the word kleptomaniac from that word. Someone who reaches for something that doesn't belong to him or to her. Why do we do it? Because, friends, as I said to someone this morning, we do not sin to become sinners. We sin because we are sinners. The reason we steal is because there is something in us that drives us to do it. It is a part of us. We are born with that nature. Let me give you some illustrations of that. I used to work at Simpsons at Yorkdale. There was a certain code number that was given when someone is arrested for stealing. My department was right beside where the secret agents were. The store would open at 9:30 Saturday morning, and by 9:33 the code was already going. And I will never forget one morning as I saw this elderly grandmother with her little grandson, whom she brought with him to help her steal because she could not speak English. And she took her grandchild to explain in the event they got caught. This business of awakened perversity, when we see what someone else has, my friends, it awakens something in us. I can tell you, my friends, I don't think we have any lawyers in this congregation. Have you heard of the lawyer's dilemma? The lawyer who made out a will for a little old lady and charged her $100. And when the little old lady had paid the $100, when she left and thanked him, got her documents on her way, he sat in his office, and as he was looking at the money, there were $200. The $100 was stuck to the other one. And he had a moral dilemma. You know what his dilemma was? Should I share the next $100 with my partners? Awakens perversity. My friends, you and I have no idea what happens when we look at what someone else has, when the opportunity comes to benefit ourselves at the expense of someone else. Is this not what Shakespeare had in mind? In Othello? Steal my purse, you steal trash. But oh, he who steals my name robs me of what I am to benefit himself. It awakens perversity in us. We see someone with what we don't have, and immediately we begin to race in our minds. What's going to happen? Several years ago, I was visiting my mom in Chicago, and I walked into one of the big department stores, and I thought I'd never go back. Because as you walked into the store, there were detectors at the door, and I thought, I hate walking into stores where these things are. I couldn't wait to get back to Canada. Now you can't even walk into Becker's without them being there. Everywhere,
We look, we see, my friends, what God said way back there. And Beckers tries now to help God by putting detectors there. And Eaton's. And I was going to say Simpson's. And the Bay. You cannot walk into a store today that does not have detectors so as to keep people from stealing.
My wife and I were talking about something yesterday. We went to the store for something, and by the time we were finished, with the GST and the PST, it was just disgusting.
And my wife said, think of the markups that they do and all these things. I said, just a minute, honey. Let me tell you what I've discovered. Do you know, friends, that the prices you and I pay for things in the stores today are actually up by 30% to compensate for stealing? To compensate for stealing. We pay 30% more because this commandment is not adhered to. So you see, it awakens perversity in us. Look at some television programs that tells you, if you do this, this is what we are going to do. It's stealing. Religious stealing. When a minister says on television, you get this to me and I am going to get this to you, it's stealing. And I don't need to be more accurate than that. And so, my friends, we see, first of all, this privilege of ownership. We see how God has given us what we have. And he's going to now protect for us what we have. And he blasts from there, no stealing. Because you see, what Karl Marx had in mind was that to prevent people from this appearance of inequity is to form a government where it owns everything. And if communism can make every man equal, then no one will steal. And my friends, you don't need to be a scientist to know that that's not true. Communism was born because someone thought there are inequities upon the earth. But it doesn't help. It doesn't help. And so God said there is understanding, knowing that there'll be some perils in ownership. He established laws to protect society. I reminded myself several years ago of my mother in Chicago. Someone called her in the corner of a store, a department store in Chicago, and asked her where a certain department was. And my mom, being the wonderful person she is, willing to help, went over, and she was hypnotized and made to go to the bank and draw almost all her savings. Perversity. You go to New York, let me tell you, if you're getting ready to go to New York, be careful. When I go to New York, every time I'm walking down Fifth Avenue and so on, I hit my back pocket. You know, make sure the wallet is there. Someone comes to you and asks you what time it is, be careful. Because, my friends, all you have to do is to look at your watch and somebody else is there taking your purse, your wallet, or something else. Perversity. What I'm saying to you, my friends, the reason I'm laboring this point is because Jesus, or perhaps I should say Jeremiah said it way back in Jeremiah 17:9, the heart is deceitful and wicked. And we can make ways by which people can steal. Can steal. I took time yesterday to just look at the Markham Economist and Sun, Crime Watch, and there are crimes being committed in Markham right now. It wasn't there 8 years ago when we moved here. It wasn't here. Well, I don't need to labor the point. Perils of ownership. Let's look at the protection of ownership. The protection of ownership. It is protected. Ownership is protected through a divine edict. An edict is a command given based upon law. And it is the law of God that we should not steal. John Calvin has a very wonderful line. I thought I had to give you this. John Calvin writes this way. He said, God could have easily put the commandment in some other ways. He could have said, be careful lest you take any of your neighbor's goods from him. You know, I love these signs that say, instead of having no smoking, they say, thanks for not smoking. And you say, what if I don't want your thanks? I don't mean to be funny, but God could have made a suggestion, as Ted Koppel once said. God, as he understood it, didn't give 10 suggestions or opinions. He gave 10 commandments. And Christians need to hear it. Because, my friends, in a recent Gallup poll, it was discovered that many, many Christians are actually guilty of stealing as any other, that Christianity has not permeated the workplace. That's why I had Colossians 3 read this morning. We are new creatures. We're supposed to be setting our affections on things above. We're not to be coveting what others have. So Calvin says, be careful. God didn't say, be careful lest you take your neighbor's goods from him. Look out that you don't gain your profit at your fellowman's expense. Beware not to engage in violence, because remember, whenever you steal, the possibility of violence is there. Nobody goes into a store to rob it and say, well, if the owner doesn't give it, I'll just go home. No. Do you know the new church right here in Markham Road? Greek church? Do you know that even before it was opened, the baptismal font was stolen? That's where we are, friends. Beware not to engage in violence. But in one word he said, don't steal. I'm still quoting Calvin here. Why did he put it that way? In order that we might regard fraudulent activity, robbery, graft, and all wrong with the greatest abhorrence, and be ashamed of cheating, because whenever we cheat, we are cheating in the presence of God. In 1 Kings chapter 21, Ahab had everything he wanted. He was the king. And Naboth had a piece of land. And Ahab said, I want that piece of land. And Naboth said, that land has history to it. That land was given to me by my ancestors. I want to keep it within the family. And Ahab went home and connived with his wife Jezebel. And they did two things to get the piece of land. They robbed Naboth of his character. They robbed him of his character. They made lies about him. And then they murdered him. And Ahab paid a dear price for that. God could have said it any other way, but he says, don't steal. He has a reason for saying it. And by a direct edict, he puts it in ways that you and I can understand. He didn't make suggestions. He didn't give options. He simply says, don't steal. And my friends, I can talk about a whole lot of things. But I won't. Through direct explanation as well. Direct explanation. Three things we are told, my friends, we must do when we are caught stealing. One, Luke chapter 19, 7-9, restitution through regeneration. Zacchaeus was a thief and a manipulator, and when Jesus Christ came into his home and rescued him from his own heart, he said, Lord, if I have stolen anything from anyone, I will restore it. Four times he went to Leviticus to find out, or he was acquainted with it, what to do when stealing can be no longer a part of one's life. Restitution through regeneration. He responded to God. He realized, my friends, that to steal was a violation of the very nature of God, because what we have, God has given to us. Generosity through grace. Generosity through grace. Ephesians 4:28. Let him that steals no longer, but let him work with his hands that he might have enough and to give to anyone who might have need. We see this displayed in Acts chapter 2. Those who had sold some of what they had and gave to those who did not have. Generosity through grace. No pressure. No pressure. Someone called me this morning early and talked about someone in our community who just gave birth to a young child prematurely. And the husband walked out on this person with three young children. The Sunday school class I'm teaching, many came to me and said, what can we do? And I'm going to call back this person and say, here are some people you can call. They called me just before the service started this morning. Generosity through grace. My friends, if you and I are going to learn how to give, it will take the grace of God, because by nature we try to keep. Giving is not a gift we have been born with. It is a gift of grace. You know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ. Though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that you might be able to experience the riches of God. Honesty through holiness. Honesty through holiness. I'm going to read it and then come to the end of this service. Titus chapter 2, verses 9 and 10. Listen to these words. Titus 2. Urge bond slaves to be subject to their own masters in everything, to be well-pleasing, not argumentative, not pilfering. That's stealing. In other words, my boss could not be paying me what I deserve because I think he couldn't know what wonderful, wonderful workers he has. But my friends, I do not justify his wrong by stealing from him. I do not justify my rights by stealing from him. Either one is wrong, is a sin against God. He goes on to say in chapter 3, verse 8 of Titus, this is a trustworthy statement concerning these things. I want you to speak confidently, so that those who have believed God may be careful to engage in good deeds. These things are good and profitable for mankind. Oh, my friends, if our bosses could know that we believe in God and that rules out stealing, that rules out stealing time from them, that rules out stealing anything from them, that rules out talking about them. Because God owns me, I have discovered godliness with contentment is great gain. And we're told to exercise ourselves in godliness. At the turn of the century, evangelistic services were being held in Belfast, Ireland. The speaker was one Mr. W.P. Nicholson. And I can't say I've heard of him. But he was holding meetings. In those days, Belfast was the number one place in shipbuilding. And as soon as the whistle would go, all the men would just leave their work and go to listen to Mr. Nicholson. As he spoke with the deep conviction and power of the Holy Spirit, his history goes, men started to take back to their work the things they were stealing. One day the boss made an announcement. Will all those who have been attending Mr. Nicholson's meeting please stop returning the goods? We have no place to put them. I wonder, my friends, what impact we would make on the world if God's call to honesty would be practiced by God's people. It is profitable for all men, mankind everywhere. Let us give heed.